This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. This message is a warning.
Everyone, hang on!
Karabast. Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions.
Let's go get him.
All right, if I tag along?
I'm on my mark. Get down!
My name is Rex.
The rebels of the Lothal system. Hunt them down. My gut tells me this is a trap.
Everywhere we go, we run into those guys.
Kenobi!
To defeat an enemy, you must know them.
I'm not afraid.
That's what worries me.
Embrace your destiny.
We are fighting a bigger fight.
He was my master.
Ahsoka, why did you leave? Do you know what I've become?
Yes, master.
And now, here's your host, Aaron Harris.
Welcome to Rebels Reactions. Boy, we got an episode to discuss today. Rebel Assault is the topic of this week's show, and it is going to be an all-star lineup to talk about an all-star episode. They held no punches in this episode as things went through. So let's jump right in and get going. This episode is something we've been waiting for a while. We get the Battle of Lothal finally happening. And as that happens, Kanan, Ezra, Sabine, Zeb, and Ryder are on Lothal. And they, of course, they go and try to sabotage and destroy some Imperial air defenses around the target facilities that Hera and Chopper, who are leading a Rebel strike force of 24 X-Wings. Yes, that's right, folks. X-Wings and Y-Wings. From the rebellion coming in to destroy the target. So, fortunately, Thrawn was there with his fleet, and things didn't go the way everybody wanted. After breaking through the perimeter of Star Destroyers and support vessels, they make it into Lothal, where they are, unfortunately, wiped out by the fleets of TIE fighters, the second wave of TIE fighters that intercept them. Hera survives her crash. Unfortunately, though, she is in behind enemy lines, per se, and is having to make her escape. She bumps into one of her pilots, which is the returning Mark Matton from Iron Squadron. Of course, they try to escape the city together, but unfortunately, they're being hunted by stormtroopers and Grand Admiral Thrawn's personal assistant, you could say, Rook, is after him as well. The assassin, of course. Fortunately, they are trying to make their escape. Our heroes outside the city, who Kanan, Ezra, and the group, watch the fleet go down, and Kanan decides he needs to go in and rescue her. So he heads into the city while Hera's trying to get out. Things go awry, and Hera winds up being captured by Rook as she is making sure Mart and Chopper make it to safety. Kanan never makes it to her, but he is stopped by the mysterious White Loath Wolf after their brief encounter with some interesting words exchanged there. The show ends as Kanan, Mart, and Chopper make their escape out of the city under the watchful eye of that Loath Wolf. So, definitely an action-packed episode. A lot of fun. And bought some all-star hitters in to discuss the episode with me. Of course, we have Jason Brown, Coffee with Kenobi contributor and good friend of mine. Jason, how you doing?
I am doing excellent and happy to be here. It's been way too long.
It has been, my friend. It's good to have you back on and talk to you again. The other man that we got with us needs no introduction. Co-founder of Coffee with Kenobi, host of the flagship show Coffee with Kenobi, the original host of this show, and an all-around great guy, Dan Z, is with us as well. Dan, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing fabulous. Thank you so much for that very gracious introduction. It is a pleasure to be on the show, and as always, I love how you've decorated the place. Looks gorgeous. And this is a great episode to be on with you two gentlemen, who I always love to talk to, no matter what the situation. And plus, you guys know your Rebels, so this is going to be fun.
Yes, this is going to be a blast. There's so much in this episode, and I couldn't have lined this up any better. You two are perfect to discuss this episode because y'all have such great knowledge, not only of Star Wars, but of I can't, just lost my train of thought there, but it happens. But y'all are perfect for the show. That's all that matters. So let's jump right into it. Let's go into initial thoughts. And Jason, we'll start with you. What were your first thoughts after watching Rebel Assault?
You know, I mean, with any of these Rebels episodes, it's always exciting to see how much time has passed since the last one. Of course, given my proclivity to the Star Wars storytelling universe, I always try to think of things in the big picture. And sometimes the episodes are right back to back, and sometimes there's a big gap. And here we see, you know, the arrival of Hera in the battlefield. So we, you know, the preparation doesn't happen as much as jumping right into the action, which is always great when Star Wars does that. It's always known for jumping in the action. Loved every minute of that. And there were so many amazing moments in this that kind of started to bridge the gap between this and what is to come. And we know, of course, the visuals and things that we know from Star Wars and Rogue One, and we're getting a little bit of that here. I mean, with this epic space battle, we don't get a lot of that in Rebels, and that was just it was something to see. And you know, with a lot of these shows, sometimes you think the heroes are gonna win out, and it's always nice when we're surprised. And of course, we're not always happy when that happens, but there's still a little doom and gloom coming our way, and it's, you know, who knows what's coming. It does make it really exciting.
It really does make it exciting, and definitely it's this show definitely lines up with that. And we don't always get the heroes winning. I mean, we see that with Empire Strikes Back. I mean, we obviously, it was a darker movie, and the heroes not necessarily won. They survived, but they didn't win. We saw that with Rogue One. They did steal the plans, but of course the team died. So we have these dark moments in Star Wars, and this is definitely lines up into that as the episode goes in. Dan, what were your initial thoughts?
I think just from the get-go, there are certain key transitional moments, which I'm sure we'll break down very soon, that are spectacular. And I actually remember saying a lot, "Oh, that was gorgeous." There are certain key things they're doing. I think the color in this episode is powerful. I think there is a ton of symbolism, even more than usual. And there's probably some great hero moments. And after this episode, I now have a definitive answer to a question that I know we're going to discuss later.
Oh, you better believe we'll discuss it later. I know where you're going with that one. So this was definitely by far a great episode. And I'm right there with you, Dan. This was an episode when I sat down and I watched for the first time. I was like, ooh, oh, ooh, all through it. It was definitely an edge of your seat episode. So it was definitely good. A lot of great things happening for the first time. A lot of return character from previous seasons. So it was a lot of fun, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. So let's jump right in and just start hitting on a few topics here. And of course, we can't talk about Rebel Assault without talking about the vehicle, the space fighter that we have been waiting to see since season one. And we finally got to see it in this episode. Let's talk about the X-Wings, guys. Of course, Hera is flying an X-Wing with Chopper in the back. Proper fit for Chopper. And they come out of hyperspace, and they launch that attack on Lothal. When you first saw those X-Wings come out of hyperspace, what were your thoughts, Dan?
I thought it was spectacular because they look sleek, and it's the first time we've seen them on Rebels, of course, which is a very big deal, and they talk about that a lot on Rebels Recon. But I think for me, the extra adrenaline for this was seeing Hera and Chopper in the X-Wing, and the transitional card that goes from a laser blast to the Star Wars Rebels logo showed you that this is an episode that's going to stand out. And it's going to be flashy, and it's going to show you things you haven't seen before. And it completely delivered on every level. And I'm, by that, I mean the X-Wings. And do you want to go into the flying details yet, or do you want to wait for that?
Well, we're going to get into that in a minute. I mean, X-Wings are very symbolic in Star Wars. We've had those since 77 with the New Hope. So they've always been a... When somebody thinks starfighters in Star Wars, I mean, else when they think spaceships, of course, everybody drifts to the Falcon, but they also come back to the X-Wing. Those are probably the two most popular ships that we've seen come out of Star Wars all around. So having it and now incorporated into Rebels in this episode was quite enjoyable. I will have to admit, as much as I wanted to see X-Wings in this series, I figured the introduction would be a little more of a bang, rather than just opening the episode and them coming out of hyperspace. Not disappointed. I thoroughly enjoyed the episode, and I love seeing the X-Wings, but it wasn't the intro I was entirely thinking of when I thought we were getting X-Wings. But definitely, it was completely good, and it worked perfectly for the episode.
I'm curious, what would have delivered for you on that level?
Well, in the back of my mind, when I was thinking X-Wings, and I've been thinking X-Wings for a long time, just wondering when we were going to get them, especially after we got the Y-Wings last season, when they stole the Y-Wings. And the speculation was X-Wings. We know X-Wings got to come show up eventually. You know, in the back of my head, I figured, you know, something's going to happen, especially with the TIE Defender now being out in the open. I figured there'd be some kind of battle with the TIE Defenders involved, and there'd be multiple defenders. And as the crew was in danger, about to get quashed out of nowhere, these X-Wings would come out of hyperspace and just pretty much clear the field. It was pretty much what I was thinking. But, you know... That was, you know, the perfect, I wouldn't say perfect, that was the idea I had in my mind, but you know, for this episode, this was perfect. That's just what I was thinking when it came to it, so.
Sure, well, that makes sense.
Yeah. So, Jason, what were your thoughts when the X-Wings came swooping in for the first time?
Well, I have to say, and I don't know if this is just because I don't isolate Rebels when I think about it. I didn't really, I don't think I realized it was the first time they had been in the show. I think for me, it's a natural progression of where the show was going and has to go. We were going to see them eventually. I think the biggest surprise for me wasn't the X-Wings, but was seeing Hera pilot the X-Wing herself. That was the moment where I was like, oh, okay. We haven't seen this before, because we've seen her in an A-wing, we've seen her in a B-wing, but we haven't really seen her maneuver one of these. And I think that's when it started clicking for me that this is a special moment for the show. Especially like Dan said, seeing Chopper in there was pretty cool. But also seeing that the X-wings themselves were X-wings, but they were painted differently than what we're used to seeing. And of course, as the battle progresses, we understand why. It's the same, reason that Blue Squadron from Rogue One we never saw again. So a lot of stuff like that. I think it's just amazing. I think it's it was a great introduction for them. It was for me, it was organic, and I think maybe that's where you're feeling the less bombastic introduction. I think this is just the natural progression of Rebels as it gets to some conclusion where we know it's going to bridge into the story from Rogue One somewhat seamlessly, if not overlap. We don't know where that's going, but we've been hinted it could get there. We don't know.
Right. And this is something where it's really not about the X-Wing. It's more about the assault on Lothal and the fact that Hera is a part of that. And I think that's where it sort of happens. And I agree organically. It just is put in there in such a way that you're like, well, yeah, of course. And even if there wasn't the pomp and circumstance before it, I think you would have felt like, whoa, because of the way that it's shot, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you both bring up great points. And the way it was shot and the way it came out of hyperspace, it fit perfectly for this episode. And it was definitely the entrance that we needed into this action-packed episode. And it was for and I would have to say, going back, it is a great entrance for these X-Wings. And I know, Jason, you brought up the paint scheme being different. That was one of the first things I noticed when they came out of hyperspace. The color scheme is, in my opinion, was very reminiscent to the color scheme of the Ghost. Did y'all catch that?
Oh, that's interesting, because of
the green.
Yeah, I do see that now that we're talking about it. Yeah, it's very much so.
Yeah, Phoenix Squadron was Phoenix Squadron of X-Wings was same color as the Ghost. So I found that as a nice little tribute nod, however they meant it. But I thought that was thoroughly enjoyable. And of course, a part of her Hera's crew, part of her flight squadron, we have a returning character from a season or two ago from the episode Iron Squadron. We have the return of Mart Matten. I have to make sure I don't say Matt Martin on that one.
I know.
Tongue twister there. I typed it the wrong way in my show notes, so I had to correct myself as I was saying it. But yeah, Mart Matten is back. He is flying an X-Wing. Good to see him back. Last time we saw him, we weren't sure where him or the rest of Iron Squadron were going to end up. Of course, Mart is the nephew of the late Commander Sato from earlier in earlier seasons of the show. You will remember him.
Aww, yes. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yep, sad day. Nephew.
So, a moment of silence for Commander Sato. There we go. So,
pour one out.
Yeah, pour one out. Here, raise a cup of coffee for you. So, but it was good to see him back, and he pretty much held his own through that. What were your thoughts on the return of Mr. Matten, Jason?
You know, I think it kind of reminds me of, and I can't remember, I think it was Dave Filoni who said it, but there's a lot going on in this last season, which is helping us pull out some of those episodes that we may have either thrown away as far as their relevance in the overarch of the series. And I think this is one of those. This actually makes, that Iron Squadron episode, which didn't feel like it was really going anywhere. Actually, you know, here's one of those characters come back, and they even addressed, you know, where the others might be when they were talking about them in the Rebels Recon over at StarWars.com. So I think having him back is a great way to kind of tie that up, bridge an arc to an earlier show for those of us who really like to pay attention to that kind of stuff. And it was nice to see him, you know, a lot of these rebels who come into the rebellion and, you know, really had no purpose come to find a purpose. And I think that's a closure for a character story. Albeit short, it is satisfying.
Yep. It just didn't click for me when I watched it the first time through. It just didn't register that was Mart. And then when I saw Matt change his Twitter profile picture, and I thought, oh, okay. So when I watched it again, I actually was much more invested in the character's journey, if you will. Usually it's another pilot and you don't really know what to think. But it's cool that they're connecting everything again. And you already knew he was a really strong pilot anyway, so that just makes sense that he would fly with Hera.
Oh, absolutely. And I'll have to confess it all, Matt, Jake, and Dan. Oh, forgetting everybody's name. So when they first start mentioned Mart on the show, they just called him Mart. I recognized him, but I could not place who he was. And it actually took me going back to the website after the episode guide posted and seeing the full name when it truly hit me. I'm like, okay, that's who that is. It's Iron Squadron. So it was definitely good to see him back. And Jason, you brought up a very good point where this going back to some of the episodes that a lot of people didn't feel tie in. A lot of people would have, I know a lot of people classified Iron Squadron as that nasty word that I absolutely abhor, which is a filler episode. There are no filler episodes for Star Wars. Everything is free game. you never know when it's going to show back up. Bam, here's Iron Squadron. So again, I'm proven correct. So I will run with that. No filler episodes for Star Wars, any kind. So thoroughly enjoyed seeing Mr. Matten in the episode. And he brings up something during the episode, and he refers to it a couple times. Hera is apparently now a general. I don't remember her being referred to as general in any of the previous episodes. We know she got general because they page her in Rogue One as General Syndulla, but I don't recall her ever being mentioned as a general prior to this. Dan, Jason, do y'all remember that from before this episode? Or
Jason and I are going to arm wrestle over this one, I think. I thought that she was referred to by Mon Mothma in a previous episode, but I've been wrong before, and it's very possible I'll be wrong again.
Well, you know, it's one of those things we just have to go back and research. So, trust me, I will be going back and looking at some of the past episodes to find out for sure. But for me, this was the first time it actually impressed upon me that she was called General. And it was several times throughout the episode. Mart refers to her as General several times, and then calls her Hera at one point. But General definitely struck out or stood out in my mind for this episode. Jason, did you have any recollection of that?
I will be honest. I don't recall her being referred to as General at all in this episode, but I'm pretty sure I'm wrong at that one. Because I've been trying to – I haven't been really focused too much on it, but I knew at some point that was probably going to happen, given that she was referred to as a general in Rogue One. So I await the result of the research unless I do it first, which I probably won't.
So that's a no on the arm wrestling? Is that what you're saying?
I concede.
You concede.
A gentleman and a scholar.
Oh, boy. I was looking forward to that, too. Yeah, a little arm wrestle and coffee afterwards, you know?
How about we'll just buy nachos together? How about that?
Mmm, delicious.
At Disney Springs, at Jock's.
I like it.
It sounds like a plan to me. Sounds like a good one. So, all right. So, a lot of fun in this episode. A lot more stuff happening. Of course, the fleet, as we mentioned during the synopsis, when the fleet comes out of hyperspace, we have 24 X-Wings and Y-Wings that need to penetrate a fleet of Star Destroyers and support ships before making it to the planet to their target. And we have a big space battle that ensues, which is just which felt great. I mean, it felt very much like a Star Wars space battle in this episode. Reminded me a lot of the Battle of Endor with the fighters swarming around the Star Destroyers, just trying to make their escape. And we have Scaris, Volt Scaris, the Imperial super pilot, Top Gun pilot, we'll say, out about in his TIE Defender Elite, raising some havoc and causing some problems for everybody, taking out as many X-Wings as he can, before he has a interesting encounter with Hera. And Hera apparently really gets under his skin. We see them go get into a little bit of a dogfight, which winds up involving a Star Destroyer, and it just goes downhill for that from Scaris. Because then he's trying to chase her down. He charges, and Hera sets course and pretty much is charging Thrawn Star Destroyer, and Scaris won't break off his pursuit. So Thrawn just opens fire on both of them. Unfortunately, that led to the destruction of Scaris, as Hera is able to make some spectacular moves in her X-Wing and take out the Defender. Let's get into Hera's flying and this whole dogfight with Scaris and then Thrawn pretty much taking Scaris out at that point. When you watched this scene from the beginning, what was the first thing that stood out to you through this dogfight, Dan?
What happened is that this is probably the most spectacular piece of flying I've ever seen in all of Star Wars canon. That's what happened. Thought it was something that I've done certainly a million times when I've been playing with an X-Wing, both as a kid and as an adult. But I thought it was brilliant. And Hera has been doing these incredible moves, hitting light speed, very similar to Han Solo in The Force Awakens, right in through a hangar. And then this epic move, and she's spectacular. I mean, this was, as I said, it's hard to top something like this.
So you're exactly right. And Hera, like you mentioned, Hera made that Force Awakens type move that Han made in the last episode. And this episode, that whole move where she makes, where after she swarms through the debris from the explosion on the Star Shore, she pretty much just flips her X-Wing around, goes vertical, and pretty much just catches the defender off guard. That, to me, when I saw that scene, that also went back to Force Awakens, because that reminded me of the whole maneuver Rey did with the Falcon on Jakku. So that was a very interesting move there. Hera is a spectacular pilot. I didn't even know the X-Wings could fire their guns when the S-foil's not engaged. So, because her wings were closed after that move when she was firing. I didn't know I just assumed.
Yeah, that was cool.
It really was. And they've caught, of course, Scaris completely off guard. He got hit and, of course, crashes into a support vessel, a cruiser, which crashes into a Star Destroyer. And, of course, everything collapses from there. Jason, what did you think of Hera's piloting skills and throughout this episode?
I mean, there's no denying that she is as skilled as we saw her. And this just goes beyond to show us what she is capable of and that she is a pilot, truly. I think one of the biggest – there's a couple telling things about this whole battle sequence. The Empire is recognizing her, which is, I think, one of the first times we've seen her identified by the villains in the episode or in the show as the target. I mean, it's usually Ezra or Kanan that they're after, and this time it is Hera, and they know her because of her skill as a pilot. This is something they've recognized and something they can see and understand. And I think the other side of this, and I don't know if I'm jumping the gun or not, but the way I think how much Thrawn, we see a lot of Thrawn, and how truly intelligent he is, and how actually Thrawn's weakness is the fact that no one actually believes that he's as smart as he is, because right, because they could have avoided. I mean, in a sense, he told the TIE pilot to get out of the way because, you know, and then he's like, well, he's his loss because he's an idiot. He didn't listen to what I had to say because he saw through what Hera was going to do. And I think that's the brilliance of Thrawn. And of course, having that second wing of TIE fighters waiting, I mean, because he sees through it all. And I think that's what makes him an appropriate villain for these. But again, his weakness is those around him not listening to him. And this is the second time that's happened.
He's definitely the perfect foil for Hera. And I love, it's not even begrudging respect. I genuinely think he admires Hera a lot. I don't even think he sees her as an enemy, more as just sort of an adversary or an opponent, which I think is fascinating.
Oh, I definitely agree with that. No, he has a lot of respect for Hera. And we see that throughout this episode, and we see it throughout other episodes, like Flight of the Defender, an episode or two ago, when we see the Ezra and Sabine steal the TIE Defender Elite to get the hyperdrive, essentially, and they wind up crashing it. But when they're having their little dogfight with the TIE Interceptors, which are sent dispatched after it, in the conference room or watching the fight happen, Thrawn's getting everybody's opinion. They're like, well, that has to be Harris and Dula. She's taking out our fighters left and right. And Thrawn just, you know, he's like, no, it's not Captain Syndulla. Our fighters wouldn't have lasted this long. So he knows, and I said this in that episode too, he knows Hera, I think, better than Hera realizes. I think he knows Hera better than any member of that crew. And I think a lot of that has to do with him being on Ryloth and being in her home, going through the family heirlooms, studying the family. He's had that up close and personal contact with Hera that he's been able to study. So he's able to predict her more than anybody else really in this crew. Which I think that's why he found Ezra so fascinating, when Ezra just kind of fell in front of him and went, hey, in that same episode. So, you know, they have a very unique, I would say they have a very unique relationship in Rebels right now. And I'm interested to see how this proceeds, especially now that we're not spoiling anything, we're just getting into it later, but we know that she gets captured at the end of the episode, so seeing how they interact after, now that she's captured and in their custody, will be interesting to see going forward, being, I think there's that huge level of mutual respect between the two. A lot of fun there, seeing the piloting skills of Hera, and let's go ahead and talk about this for a second, because we've talked about how well good of a pilot she was and everything. And I know this was a question that Andy Gutierrez was asking everybody on Recon. I'm going to steal it and add to it. Thank you, Andy. Jason, let's go with you. Who's the better pilot, Hera, Poe, or Han?
I don't feel like I have enough information on Han at the moment. Although his fancy flying of the Falcon in the Han Solo comic was pretty stellar. But I think from just a pure skill and maneuverability standpoint, we've seen the most from Hera at this point. So I'm going to say Hera with reservation for future content.
You would be an excellent politician. I like this.
I was thinking the same thing. Very good. Okay. Dan, same question. Hera, Poe, right. Han.
Well, as I said at the beginning of the show, it gave me pretty much the definitive. They asked the conversation on Rebels Recon was, is it Hera or Poe? And to me, that's the wrong question, because that's like saying, is Michael Jordan better than LeBron James? Because they're different eras. Literally, they're talking about a 30-year gap. Not for Jordan, but which, by the way, is by far better than LeBron James. So we can talk about that on another show. But Hera, you know, is a much different time frame generationally. But I feel like she's just a little bit better than Han. And actually, when I was debating this, I did think of the Han Solo comic that you're referring to, Jason, is sort of the litmus test, because we know Han Solo is amazing. And it's hard to argue against him. But as I say in Rebels Recon, Hera's been flying a freighter with the maneuverability of a fighter, you know, a small fighter plane, and she's been spectacular. So, I mean, I think this is sort of it. And Pablo does say definitively that Hera is better than Poe. So, I mean, that's not a Han Solo comparison, but, and again, this is all subjective anyway. There's no real way to know, but I'm comfortable with saying Hera is the best pilot.
Well, based on everything we've seen, I would have to agree with both of you. Definitely, I would have to say Hera's the better pilot. We've seen her fly pretty much everything. We've seen her fly the Ghost, and of course the Phantom, of course A-wings, Y-wings. We've seen her fly the X-wing, and she's flown them all with ease and perfection. Not a single flight that we've seen has been a struggle for her. And not to take away from Poe or Han, Poe had some spectacular moves in I was about to say the Phantom Menace. That would have been interesting.
Well, basically, if you in a fictional universe, if you had to say, this is the pilot that you need to entrust with your life. You could say any of those three mm-hmm. and feel perfectly satisfied. But I would actually, what you said a few minutes ago, we have seen Hera struggle, and I think that's why she's great, because she still manages to come out on top, and she gets shot down here. So that's obviously not perfect, but she's able to survive the crash, which is a skill in and of itself when you're a pilot. And that's why I think she's such a great character, because she's not the idealized version of gender, but she has flaws, and she is able to grow and learn from her mistakes. And she does so with panache and just determination and grit. And I think that's why she gets the edge. And that's not to take away from Han Solo in any way, of course.
No, we all love Han. We all love Han in our own special way. Han is a staple in Star Wars, and definitely we have a lot of respect for all three of their piloting skills. But definitely, I would still have to go with Hera. I mean, she's just she has put it out there more than anybody else, and her reputation is. If Thrawn respects that type of flying, I can't deny it. So she's a spectacular pilot. So now let's shift out of space, and let's go to the planet for a little bit here. After everybody crash lands on Lothal, Hera meets up with Mart, and they are trying to make their escape. And they're being hunted by Rook. And Rook is, of course, Thrawn's assassin, voiced by the extremely talented Warwick Davis. And we see a very... he encounters them twice. He catches up with them. Fight ensues. And Hera actually is a lot better at hand-to-hand combat than I really would have imagined. And Rook, she really stood toe-to-toe with Rook. Fought him, and they were able to... She wasn't able to completely fight him off. She was actually rescued by Chopper. Go Chopper. Chopper lives. So we see them survive the first encounter, but of course she's taken down at the second. What were your thoughts on her interactions with Rook and basically the hand-to-hand combat that she was involved in? Jason?
Rook was not who I wanted him to be, and I think that's just... That's probably should have been said on the last episode he was on. But, I mean, I think one thing we saw demonstrated there was that Hera can take care of herself, right? I mean, she didn't really get captured there until, the others came in and intervened. I mean, her skill with Rook was amazing, especially since I think Rook's been played up to be someone who is highly skilled. So if we believe that Rook has the skills, I mean, given that he works for Thrawn, you would assume he does. That really elevates Hera to a whole new level of just skill. And I think they were the choreography of that was also really interesting. I think just what they were able to do in the animation with this scene, I think it was a step up from what we've seen in terms of hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah, I agree. Well said. The choreography was beautiful. And at first, when I knew that Rook was going to go toe-to-toe with Hera, at first I was nervous for Hera, and I thought, oh, this is going to be a problem. But then when they have their little fight and then there's a break off, then they come back, I actually wasn't remotely worried because I saw how Hera matched him, and I was really impressed. I mean, she's a force to be reckoned with. I feel like we say that a lot about Hera, but I don't know. She's just awesome, whether she's flying or she's doing the hand-to-hand. But what you said, Jason, about Rook isn't who you want him to be, I agree with that. And I wasn't able to really articulate that before, but maybe just how I pictured him when I read the Thrawn trilogy for the first time. I always pictured the Nograi to look more like a tough version of Sai Snoodles for whatever reason. That's just what was always in my mind. I don't know why. But maybe it's the way that he runs, the kind of like a primate. And it's not that it's bad, but that's a hard character to match. Now, Thrawn, I think, is hit all the marks that we would have wanted him to. But Rook is a mixed bag.
No, I would agree with that. I mean, with when it comes to Rook, I can't. I have going back to what I'm reading the books when I first read the original Thrawn trilogy, you know, when I pictured Rook, I can never remember the character's name, but you remember in A New Hope when they're going into the, they're on in Mos Eisley, they're heading to the launch bay, they've just sold the speeder, and there's that Imperial spy in the cloak, and he's got the little radar. That's what Brendan. That's what I always pictured as Rook, something like that. In the back of my mind when I was reading those books, that's what I was seeing. So I can agree with you. He wasn't exactly what I thought. For the purposes of the series, he's fit in perfectly. He's actually in Hera's ability to stand toe to toe with him is very impressive. And it wasn't that she didn't get captured until the others arrived. It was she didn't get captured till she let her guard down to rescue Mart and Chopper. She knew they were going to come back and help her, and she knew if she didn't make them leave, they would have gotten captured too. That's when she picked up her blaster, shot the lock. Which since when, you know? I'm sorry, Star Wars, shooting a lock actually stops the door from opening? I never understood that. but okay, that they shoot the lock, the door closes, and Martin Chopper are safe. But it was the whole sequence was perfectly animated. The moves are spectacular. When she did that headlock spin thing flip that she did there in the first match, where she just kind of wrapped her legs around his head and they just spun and she flipped and tossed them. I mean, I was sitting there thinking, man, this is very impressive. I wasn't expecting that much of a fight between the two. So she very much impressed me. Hera's a well-rounded character in this series. I mean, there's almost, you know, literally not much she cannot do. And she's experienced a lot of growth through the series as well. I mean, we went from just a simple pilot. I mean, and remember in the first episodes, all she really did when they got on the mission, she pretty much stayed on the ship and prepped it. When they were rescuing the Wookiees and so on and so forth, that she was flying the Ghost. But here we're seeing her in fighters, we're seeing her in hand-to-hand combat. I mean, it's a huge growth for the character. Dan, refers to you. What has impressed you the most with Hera's growth throughout this series?
I think the smart thing they've done with the evolution of Hera Syndulla as a character is that at first, I mean, Hera, you know, as we know, means mother in a lot of mythologies. And she was just sitting back and letting everyone develop. And it's not until more recent episodes and towards the end of season 3 as well that she's become more of like a ground assault or more active in some of the fight scenes. And I think that's cool because when she needs to, she can. It's always been there. I think of all of the characters, actually, maybe Zeb might fit this category as well. No, actually, I think of my original. I think Hera has grown the least because she's had the least amount of growth that she has needed to do. A lot of her growth became before season 1, episode 1 of Rebels. And even before A New Dawn, really, she had to do a lot of that when she was a teenager, which we weren't really privy to that, at least so far in our lives. So eventually when we get to that, it'll be really neat to see because she's become sort of a staple. She's become sort of the bar as opposed to just, like you said, Aaron, the pilot waiting and just sort of the taxi driver. No, she wasn't actually a taxi driver at all, but it took us a while for us as an audience to grow into where she actually was as a character, if that makes sense.
Oh, it makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. Yeah, because, and I would agree with that. I mean, from the series, from the series standpoint, looking at everybody that the characters of the crew, I mean, she probably has grown the least out of everybody. I would say she's grown the least out of everybody. So it definitely is, but the growth is still there, and it definitely is a lot of eye-opening that we had to wait and see her actually use her abilities and her skills. Jason, throughout the series, how has your thoughts on Hera changed as to her, the character, her abilities, and so on?
I think the telling moment for Hera, as we said before, during the first season or so, she was, and more or less, that supporting character. I mean, you knew there was something with her. She was kind of the leader without being the active leader, right? She was the one who leads by getting her team in the right place and coming in to rescue as needed. It wasn't really until she was asked to be Phoenix leader that we really saw her step up into an active leadership role. And I think it's one of those things where she's not someone who's ambitious in terms of like wanting these positions, like as we would kind of think about them in modern times. She's someone who has the responsibility thrust upon her because she knows that everyone around her knows what she's capable of and is trusted. It's almost like everyone else is realizing her, what she's able to do. And she embraces each challenge and goes after it with the skills that she's developed. So in a way, everyone else's development has allowed her to become who she is, as opposed to her herself being the one who has developed.
Excellent. And very good. She's allowed them to grow, and everybody has grown, and she's fair. It has been a very interesting. One thing Dave Filoni's been real good with this series, and the writers have done a phenomenal job, is writing the growth into these characters. I can't tell you. I've watched a lot of TV in my lifetime, a lot of shows. Animated, live action, I struggle to find a show where the character development is as strong as it is in Star Wars. So seeing how these characters have grown throughout the season, not just Hera but all of them, has been quite enjoyable. And I've got a few episodes left, so hopefully we'll get to see where this growth leads them. At this point, so we have the return in this episode too, toward the end, as Kanan is rushing to try to save Hera because he decides he needs to do that, which I can't say I blame him. I just was surprised it took him so long into the episode to just make that decision. But the Loathwolf intercepts him and stops him, which leads to a very interesting encounter at this point. The Loathwolf, of course, just shows up in the middle of the road, and blind Kanan, sees him through the Force and pretty much wrecks his speeder, trying to avoid hitting it. And, of course, when Kanan gets up, it's gone. It's nowhere to be found. He gets on his speeder, getting ready to turn and ride away, and the next thing you know, it's like right in his face. And there's a very interesting discussion at that point, because he's like, what do you want? Are you here to help? What's going on? What do you want? And the Loathwolf just pretty much looks at him again and just says doom. And of course, it's almost like a light bulb goes off in Kanan at that point. He pulls off his little mask so we see his blind eyes, and he's like, he pretty much gets it at that point. What he gets, we don't know yet, but he is becoming into. There's a sense of realization for Kanan at that point. And where that will lead him, we don't know. But it'd be interesting to see. This Loathwolf has been very, in his interaction with Kanan in last episode, even in this episode, has been quite interesting to actually both of their developments. And Jason, when it comes to the Loathwolf and Kanan, What are your thoughts on their interactions, on what their relationship and what the Loathwolf is trying to communicate at this point?
I mean, I wish we knew what the Loathwolf was saying, because that would make life a whole lot easier. But it is obviously something that Kanan is starting to internalize. I mean, I think we saw Ezra originally drawn to the Lothwolves, mm-hmm. but we see that their presence is more here for Kanan and his development. For me, it may be a reach, but I feel like there's a parallel between kind of where Kanan is at and the Lothwolf's presence in his journey, very similar to, say, what we would imagine a Force ghost of Qui-Gon was to Obi-Wan towards the end of his journey, or at least corporeal journey. And I think we get that similarity a lot between Jedi as they grow into this mentor figure and learning how to disconnect from the urgency of the present as they move towards the larger picture and their place in it. I think that's where, I mean, that's obviously where Kanan's going, or at least it seems like that, you know, he stops this pursuit of Hera and knows that she gets captured. I mean, you know, at the end of the film or at the end of the show that he realizes that's what happened. But he also sees the bigger picture because he is being guided to see that bigger picture by some fragment of the Force that is calling out to him.
Well, I got to say, I love what Jason said. It's really, really hard to follow that. Very insightful. The only thing I will say about the Lothwolf is, There was a part of me when I watched it the second time that thought, could these things just be a figment of the Jedi's imagination? Because Ezra has seen them and Kanan has seen them, but they are talked about by Ryder, I believe, in the last episode or two.
Yeah, he does see them.
Yeah, right. So there's something to that as far as the spiritual nature of these things. In Norse mythology, there is a wolf named Fenrir, who is an evil wolf, and it teams up with Loki to bring about Ragnarok, which for Norse mythology is the end of their world. It's their end of times. So I think it's interesting that this wolf is showing up at this point. I don't think that I think this wolf is good. I think this wolf is pure, and it's even white to emphasize that with us. But I think it's also fascinating that Ezra, his connection with animals and nature. Now we see something similar with Kanan. And Aaron, you mentioned when Kanan takes off that mask, I think that's a really important symbolic gesture, because when he takes off that mask, there's nothing to hide from. And I don't think he's wearing that mask because he's hiding. He has to because he's blind and protects his eyes. But I think for this, there is no reason to need protection because he's in tune with his walk, and I don't want to say too much more because I don't want to violate my own rule, but I love Kanan. He has gone from a super cool Jedi to one of my favorite characters, not only in Rebels or Star Wars, but all of fiction period. So I eagerly and trepidatiously await what will happen with him.
I think we all eagerly wait for what's going to happen to Kanan as time goes on. We see in this episode when when he's talking with the Lothwolf, he says doom again. And I don't know about you guys, when I watch, especially with all the hidden stuff in Rebels nowadays, I always turn on the captions to read what's being said as well. And of course, with the first time the Lothwolf appears in one of the previous episodes, and it gets face to face with Kanan, he's with Kanan, of course, and he says it to Ezra, too. When he says doom, it spells out on the screen D-U-M-E, just like Caleb Doom, Kanan's real name, his birth name. And we see that. And in this episode, I noticed with the captions, when it says, when the Lothwolf says doom, it is spelling it out D-O-O-M. So are we changing the word that it's saying, or did we just mistype it? Either way, Kanan got, the light went on in Kanan's head there. So it's interesting. I can't wait to see what his realization from this encounter is, and what he understands. So, very interesting episode overall. A lot of great things that happened there. And we did get some emails we want to go into. And listeners send in their feedback on the episode. So let's go into that.
The name's Rex. Now let's check some emails.
All right. Our first email is from Tom Novlin. Tom writes that he enjoyed this episode. It kept me on the edge of my seat the whole time. And I thought the space battle animation was amazing, especially the X-Wings. In parentheses, he's got finally. They captured the look and feel of Rogue One and New Hope and set the bar so high for the rest of the season. While I love the cameos of Hera and the Ghost Crew and Chopper, of course, in Rogue One and Forces of Destiny, they've taken away some of the suspense of the season, at least for me. I would be interested in your opinions about that, and also if you think we'll see characters from Rebels and other stories in major roles in the future. Thanks again for making the podcast so fun and entertaining. Best, Tom Novlin. Of course, referring to Forces of Destiny, of course, that's the Imperial Feast episode, which we discussed in our last show that we did, where it has Hera and Chopper both on Endor, post-Battle of Endor, and it's got that gorgeous animated scene of the Ghost and the Falcon sitting there nose-to-nose, which brings up another question, what's the better ship, the Falcon or the Ghost, but that's for another time. Definitely, I don't think it took away some of I guess you could say it took away some of the suspense. It just answered a question for me before the end of the series. That's how I took it. Jason, have y'all seen that particular episode of Forces of Destiny that's being referred to?
I have. In fact, we talked about it in the opening of Coffee with Kenobi a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what are your opinions on that? Do you think that takes away from the end of Rebels by having that episode air prior to this finale? So we know Hera and Chopper survive because they're in Rogue One. But do you think that takes away from any of the suspense going into the end of the series, or...?
No, and the fact that you brought up the Rogue One thing, I think is one of the main reasons why that is. But to me, I always refer to Romeo and Juliet when it comes to things like this. In the seventh line of the opening of the play, it says a pair of star-crossed lovers take their lives. So right away, Shakespeare's telling you, hey, these two are going to die. But you've still got the entire play to experience, so you don't know what gets them from point A to point B. And that, I think, is the part that is genius storytelling, because you're even more emotionally invested because you know there's a target. But how they're going to get there, I think, is what helps to add to the hype and the anticipation. And I do want to say for the record, while I was semi-struggling with the Hera Han Solo thing, I have no struggles when it comes to saying the Falcon is the best.
No problem. I would probably have to agree with that. The Falcon is just uniquely...
it's the Falcon.
You can't argue with that. It is the Falcon. It is the Falcon. I would like to see him in a race, though. That would be fun.
That might be why Han Solo groaned when he had to confess that Hera was the better pilot. Even though I think that episode was genius because they managed to say in the same breath that both of them were the best. I thought that was really smart.
It really was. It was a phenomenal episode of Destiny, and I enjoyed that. Jason, what are your thoughts on that particular subject?
I mean, I really don't think there's anything that we're missing from in terms of suspense or as far as the show goes. I mean, I think we're probably more delighted to see Hera and Chopper survive through to Endor because we didn't know if she's going to make it out of the Battle of Yavin. So I think that's just another for me. And for me, that knowledge is more exciting to know that there could be there's a 3 or 4 years of Hera stories that we can still get because she's obviously important to the Rebellion, and she's probably done a lot of cool stuff in those 4 years. But as far as this series, I think the suspense is always with this series is always going to be what's happening with Ezra and Kanan, because they're the big mysteries in terms of how can Luke Skywalker be around if these two are as well? How does that puzzle fit together? And we know it will. And I couldn't even begin to speculate how these two are going to fit into the larger puzzle when Rebels is over.
Jason, am I wrong, or I thought there was a reference or at least an allusion to Hera in the first Aftermath book in one of the interludes, talking about a green-skinned Twi'lek leading people across a plane and just showing a lot of leadership and courage. And I always thought that was Hera.
It's possible. I feel like I remember Sabine referenced somewhere in one of those Aftermath books. Thinking about an artist, I think.
Yeah, I think that might be the third one.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I'm. Yeah, she's got legs. That girl. There's a lot more.
Is that a ZZ Top reference?
It wasn't intentional.
Touche. And I think we can all agree that to the second part of his question is. Do we think we'll see characters from Rebels in other stories or in major roles in the future? I think we'll definitely see characters in the future, whoever survives or whatever the hell the story ends. I think we'll see more. Major roles, I don't know if we'll see major roles for them, but I think we'll definitely see going forward some cameos here and there.
We'll have to.
Yeah, I would think so.
They're great characters. Just because the show's going away doesn't mean that the characters will. I mean, they become ensconced in our Star Wars vernacular.
Exactly. And as we've learned from Star Wars throughout the years, nothing gets thrown away. Just because something ends doesn't mean it's over. So it can be brought back. It can be used again in the future. I mean, we have people popping up all the time. So definitely if they can be mentioned and we can see Chopper in Rogue One, there's no reason we can't see him, other characters in the future. Who knows? We will end up where they wind up on Mandalore and Sabine's the person in charge. You never know. So things can happen. Absolutely. And definitely it'd be interesting to see what happens there. We got another email, though, here from Shaylin Spargo. Shaylin wrote in. She said, "Hello, Rebel Reactions Group. Wasn't it great to finally see those X-Wings in action on Rebels? And to hear Hera say, 'Lock S-Foils into attack position,' just got me so excited." She said, "I was wondering what you guys think on the parallels between this episode and the episode Vision of Hope, particularly between Hera and Kanan's respective captures. Can't wait to hear your guys' thoughts. Thanks, Shay." Shay actually hosts her own podcast, The Elven Padawan, which is a Star Wars Lord of the Rings podcast. So thanks for writing in, Shaylin. Vision of Hope, of course, that was from season one, if I recall correctly, when that's where Kanan pretty much sacrifices himself and is captured by Tarkin and winds up being taken to Mustafar, but allowing everybody to escape. I can definitely see some similarities in that because Hera did the same thing, allowing Martin Chopper to escape. So, I mean, Dan, what are your thoughts on that?
When I saw that she was getting captured, that was the first thing that I thought of. Actually, the kind of the bookend. At first was Kanan, and now it's her. And in both instances, I presume that both characters would survive. But I was also incredibly afraid because the Inquisitor was the ultimate at that point match for Kanan. I think that Thrawn and Hera, the amount of mental chess that's going to take place is pretty scary. So I very much see the parallel. I don't think that's an accident.
No, I don't think it's an accident at all. I mean, they've planned these out precisely, and definitely I would say this was definitely a parallel. And I like how you put that. They're bookends. Their captures are both bookends on each side of the fence there. So it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward. Jason, your thoughts on the parallels between this and Vision of Hope?
I mean, I think Dan put it pretty well. I think it's the wrapping things up, and in a way, she's. I mean, Kanan was that figure for the group back then, and now she has become that leader of many more. But it is the same self-sacrificing idea, and it's great to see the parallel. Going back to the first part of the email where she said. Hearing Heresy Espel as an attack position, didn't somebody in the X-Wing battle say, "Whoop, that got him"?
Said what?
Someone in the X-Wing battle was like, "Whoop, that got him," which is totally a line from A New Hope as well. I don't.
Oh, that's right. You're right. How about that?
I did not catch that.
I didn't either. That's why he's in charge of the Canon Explained right there.
Jason, 17 for Dan Z.
Oh, jeez.
I didn't realize we were keeping score here.
No.
Notice I'm not
telling you what, I've said this before, but if ever there was someone who would be a perfect fit that I know personally for the story group, it's Jason.
His knowledge is unparalleled, so Jason is a go-to encyclopedia for sure. Oh, perfect, perfect. Shaylin, Tom, thank you for writing in and sharing your thoughts. Definitely, everybody, remember, you can always write in and share your thoughts on any episode and let us know. Just hit us up, send us an email to rebelsreactions@coffeewithkenobi.com. Rebel Assault, good episode. Great episode. Let's go into our final thoughts, and Dan, we'll start with you this time. What are your final thoughts on Rebel Assault?
I thought they had a bit of a daunting task ahead of them because this was the first one that was just one episode. There's not going to be any Rebels until after basically the euphoria of The Last Jedi has sort of fallen away, which I think is smart marketing, smart story-wise. But I think this was absolutely the way to go. There are some good cliffhangers that don't follow the trope of someone's in severe peril and will they or won't they be alive. I thought the fact that there are some open-ended things here that are progressing the story and bringing us to a place that we've wanted to see since the beginning of this series make it a really, really strong sort of a bookmark for leaving us to get more later.
Perfect, perfect. And Jason, final thoughts?
Oh, where to begin? I think this is definitely the show that we needed to have at this time in the series. It's bridging that tone from the fun-loving Rebels we had, three or four seasons ago to getting really into the heart of what the Rebellion's about. I mean, Lucasfilm had a kind of set themselves up with a daunting task in a way of really showcasing what the Rebellion was about. It was more than just, a dozen X-Wings, dozen Y-Wings sitting on in a temple on a fourth moon of Yavin. I mean, there's so much more and the scale of the Rebellion and using the series to, as they do with a lot of their shows, where they've used this series to expand on a concept that we didn't even know we wanted to know about, right? I mean, we never heard the idea of the Galactic Senate was always there, but at the end of episode 4, we knew very little about him except that, now we have this whole fictional government, and this is the series that's showing us the Rebellion without saying this is the growth of the Rebellion. I mean, this is what a great way to kind of start propelling us towards Rogue One. I think this one, more than any episode thus far, has really said, the battle of... The Battle of Scarif is happening, and it's happening soon, and we better be ready for it.
I agree. Definitely, we need to be ready for it, because you never know when that's coming on. And now I've noticed, and I'll throw this out there and correct me, Jason, if I'm wrong. The timeline, of course, is of course we know we're getting closer and closer, but how close is kind of hard to tell right now to where we are to Rogue One and a new hope, correct?
It's not that place far. That we can tell. We're not that far. I mean, you know, of course we have the key items for me is who's on Yavin, of course, because everyone was on Yavin when it came down to Rogue One. We're still conferencing in via the Star Wars version of a Polycom. Names are escaping me. Leia's father.
Bail.
Bail Organa.
Bail, yes. You know, Bail was present via hologram, but we've got Dodonna and Mon Mothma there, so we're getting close. Obviously, Mon seemed to like being on Yavin for some time before Scarif, but I think we're less than a year out, and I don't know how close we're going to get. I know Dave at one point teased that maybe we could see the Battle of Scarif from the Ghost's point of view. I don't know if we'll. I don't feel like we're going there anymore. If that was ever an idea, I don't think we're going to see it, but.
Oh, see, that's how I expect the last episode to be.
Do you really?
Yeah. And I think we're just a few weeks between battles, to be honest.
Well, that would be awesome.
Well, we know from a couple episodes ago where Saul finds out about Jedha. So we know he's going to be going to Jedha because he hadn't been there yet. Mm-hmm. So he's on his way to Jedha. So there was really never, I don't know if there was ever really in Rogue One mention of a time frame of how long he was there prior to the events of Rogue One.
Not yet. Yeah, not yet. So, not that I'm aware of.
The only kind of indicator we would have would be the placement of the Guardian of the Wills, right? Because Saul was on the planet at that point in time. So if you want to layer that one in, I think Saul was there for at least a good 6 months.
Okay.
Then again, Rebels does tend to jump months between episodes sometimes, so you can't really pinpoint anything in the timeline at this point the way they layer things in.
Right, which I think they do purposefully too, because otherwise they put themselves into a storytelling corner.
Exactly, and nobody puts Star Wars in a corner. So. There was my
Jesus. That was good. That was good.
There we go. I had to get some kind of reference in before the night because I hadn't gotten a Star Trek one in yet. So,
but now you have a Patrick Swayze one.
I got a Patrick Swayze one.
All of our dreams have come true.
I never thought I'd do a Swayze one, but hey, you know what? Who knows? Maybe next week we'll need more cowbell. So there isn't one next week. We're off for holidays. Never mind.
Merry Christmas.
So, my final thoughts on Rebel Assault was definitely this was the perfect way to go on a holiday break. We had a very action-packed episode. The 22 minutes were over before they really even began. It was phenomenal seeing X-Wings in action again. And they animated them so well. It was just perfect. Hera is still by far one of my favorite characters on this show. Chopper, of course, is my favorite. Everybody knows that. And everything goes triple for Chopper. As he reminded Hera in before the battle began. So it was definitely a fun episode. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I really can't wait to see where this goes after the holiday break. It was the perfect ending with the perfect cliffhangers that are going to carry us through the rest of the season. And it's going to be in the rest of the series, essentially. So, very good. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Grading the episode, of course, you know, we like to grade the episode on an A, B, C, D, F scale, just like if you were in school, depending on what school you go to. But, yep. So, personally, I'll go ahead and go first on this because I've been wrestling with this throughout the day because pretty much since I watched it for the first time yesterday. It was a brilliant episode, a lot of great things in it. I would honestly have to go on a grade on this. I would probably go with a B+. I've been debating between a B+ and an A-. But I'm going to go with the B+. Jason, how about you?
I would go with a solid A-. It would be a flat A if it weren't for Chopper's new little antenna. I just can't get past the mushroom.
he does have that mushroom transmitter, and that's something we didn't mention. Chopper, of course, damaged antenna, and he gets the transmitter from Mart's astromech, which we find out from reactions was actually R3's cameo. Of course, R3 was the droid that kind of took Chopper's spot when he went on hiatus. So that was a fun little cameo there. Dan, how about you? How do you grade the episode?
By the way, I got to meet R3 at Lucasfilm last week. That was pretty cool.
I would have been more impressed if you met Chopper.
I met Chopper already. I met Chopper previously, the first time I went there. Yeah, and Chopper was there too.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I'm impressed either way. You got to go to Lucasfilm, so that's my bucket list. So
I'm very fortunate. Well, we'll get you there. We'll get you there
one day.
I would say I'm impressed with both of your grades because that's exactly where I'm teetering between, and I think one of the great things about Rebels Reactions is that while we love Rebels and we love Star Wars, we're not sycophants. We don't just like everything because of the Star Wars title card. We still have to be discerning, and I think that's why I respect both your grades so much. And I'm going to go with an A-, purely because I think the introduction of the X-Wings and the title card from Rebels and Hera's flying puts it over the top for me as far as between an A- and a B+. Because I think they took some steps there that made it a little bit more bold. Seeing Hera in that cockpit is amazing. And so I'll just stick with the A-.
All right. Perfect. A-. A-, B+. So definitely some good grades there. Let us know what you thought about the episode. Definitely we want to know. You can definitely reach out to us out there, people listening. We want to know what you think. You can email us at therebelsreaction@coffeewithkenobi.com or hit us up on Twitter and let us know what you thought of Rebel Assault. You can hit us up on Twitter @rebelsreactions. So check us out there. If people want to continue talking Star Wars with you, Dan, what is the best way to do that?
Well, you can listen to Coffee with Kenobi at coffeewithkenobi.com. We are now a part of the Blog Talk Radio Network, so you can check us there as well. And it's important for me to mention that all of our family of shows, Rebels Reactions, Legends Library, Lattes with Leia, and Comics with Kenobi, all have their own individual iTunes feeds now, so be sure to subscribe to each of those shows. You can also find Coffee with Kenobi on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, anywhere you have social media. And you can find my writings on StarWars.com. And if you want to talk with me directly on Twitter, it's @MrZehr, MrZehr.
Perfect. And Jason, if somebody wants to talk Star Wars canon with you, sir, how would be the best way for them to do that?
Most of my Star Wars conversations happen on my Twitter handle @StarWarsTCE. That's Star Wars. That's short for Star Wars: The Canon Explained, which is my YouTube channel. Where at minimum, I'm putting out a timeline video once a month and explore all the Star Wars stories. And when I'm not there, I'm hanging out over at the Chance Cube, which is my podcast on Star Wars Destiny, which is a card game from Fantasy Flight Games. So you can check either one of those out. I'm there 80% of my life.
Perfect. I still need to figure out how to play that game. I got the starter set here, and I still have not found anybody to play with. So, still working
on
that.
You're not that far, sir. I'll drop down.
There we go. Let's do it. It will definitely be fun. I want to get into those, some of those games. So, of course, if you want to talk Star Wars with me, of course, outside of the Rebels Reactions channels, you can, of course, hit me up on my personal Twitter, at TAHarris121079. Of course, you can email me, aharris@coffeewithkenobi.com. Dan is right. Actually, we do have our own iTunes feed now. And, of course, since we did join up with Blog Talk, that was an awesome transition we just went through, and it's definitely going to be a fun journey going forward. Looking forward to what that brings. So if you haven't done so, make sure you go over to iTunes and or wherever you get your podcast from and subscribe to the Rebels Reactions feed. That way you don't miss an episode. Hit up our other feeds as well for the other shows, for Coffee with Kenobi, for Rebels, or we're Rebels Reactions, Comics with Kenobi, Lattes with Leia, and of course the Legends Library. We got plenty of shows to cover all of your Star Wars needs out there. Look, if you like gaming, definitely check out Jason's Chance Cube. That's a fun show as well. A lot of great information there. And check out coffeewithkenobi.com. We got some of the best, and I think Dan would agree, we got some of the best bloggers in the world out there just writing Star Wars. So definitely check that out. Dan, Jason, thank you so much for joining me for this review of Rebel Assault. It's always a pleasure to have you both on, and I appreciate you both greatly joining me today.
Hey, thank you so much. I love talking with you too, and all the time. So it's always great to get together and talk with your friends about some Star Wars. Thank you so much for having me on.
No, absolutely. You're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening in to Rebels Reactions. Definitely, we wouldn't be here without you guys. Y'all are awesome. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, this is the Rebels podcast you're looking for.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here! What?
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com, or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed @coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.